Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This is always a treat. We get to opening day and we talk to the voice of the Tigers, Dan Dickerson. Dan, thanks for making time. Happy opening day.
Hey, it's great to be here. There's nothing better. Nothing better. I love it.
What's your favorite part of opening
sound.
Day?
Listen to that
I know.
Sound. It is. Spring has sprung. Baseball's here. You hear Dan's voice. Thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely.
What is your favorite part of opening day?
I don't know. I love like walking over here. And then on the way back, walking through the parking lots, walking by all the tailgates, because I've been to a lot of cities for opening day. Everybody does a nice job. I'm sorry. I'm biased. Nobody matches Detroit. It's just the celebration that baseball is back that has such a good feel to it, and I love saying hi to fans and the atmosphere that's created in the ballpark when you've got every square inch filled with fans is pretty special.
Well, it had to be nice starting out west in regards to just the weather. And I was going to ask you this. We talked a little bit out before you came on. What's your, other than Comerica and being here in Detroit, what's your favorite place to go in Major League Baseball?
I always kind of go with American League ballparks first because we play there more. So ranking the American League ballparks, I've always loved Seattle. First day I walked in, and it's about the feel for me. That's all I can describe. I mean, everybody's going to have a different opinion.
Yeah.
But the first day I walked into Seattle, Safeco back then, it just had a great feel to it, and it's remained one of my favorites through the years. Target Field, I think, is one of the greatest new ballparks because of how they built it on a small piece of land that's very enclosed, and the upper deck is above the lower deck, which sounds funny, but no other ballpark has that.
Yeah.
None of the new ones do. So I love that. Fenway, because I feel like I'm walking into Tiger Stadium.
Right.
Since
yeah.
it opened the
History.
Same week
yeah.
in 1912. Those are a few of my favorites. Pittsburgh is absolutely gorgeous with the Roberto Clemente Bridge, the Monongahela River, the confluence of all the three rivers. So it really, that's a great one. I could go on. San Francisco's right up there as well. But those would be always in my top five.
What'd you take out of the West Coast trip, baseball-wise?
I thought the at-bats the Tigers had, and we said this going into the Seattle series, the at-bats the Tigers had against the Dodgers, that's one of the best, obviously, teams, but also pitching staffs that you're going to see, were really good. And it just kind of gets back to what the Tigers, you know, coaches talk about, that young players have to learn how to game plan and then take that game plan into a game and learn that every at-bat is different based on the game situation. That takes time. And it got better as last season went on. And so they got into games better. Certainly we saw it in that 31-11 stretch. But to see them do that against the Dodgers and work some of those at-bats, not chase, stay in the strike zone. But then the key, the next step is do damage when there are pitches in the strike zone. It wasn't perfect, obviously, in that first game without, you know, a hit with runners in scoring position. But the quality of those at-bats carried into the Seattle series, and without three regulars, I thought that was the best thing coming out of the trip. They didn't pitch as well as they're going to pitch. The pitching is still going to be the strength of this team.
And we talked about that all last week, too. The amount of pitches that opponents' pitchers were pitching versus Tigers' pitchers.
Right.
It seemed like they were working the count. They were working the good at-bats. Are you at all surprised about the foot traffic that the Tigers have had on the base paths?
No, I think that, well, Yeah, I mean, not surprised, but I think, again, that was the best part of it. Yeah. Everybody was focusing on the 0 for 15 with runners in scoring position. I concentrated on the 15 because right. if you have traffic on the base paths, you're going to get hits. I mean, that's just a fluke, in my opinion. You're going to have hits. What do the quality of the at-bats look like in the rest of the game? And that, to me, was the best part coming out of it. They're missing three guys. Those three guys come back, Perez, Meadows, Vierling.
Yeah.
The offense is going to be even better. But in the meantime, they're showing, you know, look at Dingler's at-bats. Trey Sweeney hit a home run in Seattle. That's a tough place to hit a home run. I think Cole Keith is going to have a big year at the plate. We already know about Carpenter, Green,
yeah.
and
you're leaving out somebody.
But now you've got three guys who look like they're going to contribute. And Torkelson's at-bats were terrific, too.
That's the guy we're both going to ask you about. Yeah. As fans want to know, should we believe in this? Is this happening?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Because the thing that, as he struggled, it was all about being athletic in the batter's box, right? And that's all he changed. He did not change his swing. But the Tigers always said he has elite vision, elite reaction time. You start with that. If you don't have that, it's hard to be a good hitter. So the whole idea was now you're in a better position to do damage. With that elite vision, elite reaction ability to do damage on the pitches you should do damage on, but also pitches that you didn't do anything with last year. And that's why I believe it's absolutely real.
And you brought up a name that a lot of people have jumped on early in the season, Cole Keith. And I know he didn't do himself any favors with, you know, his play at second base in that final game, but at the plate,
he stood up after the game and just said, hey,
he owned it,
you know,
owned it, which you got to love. But at the plate, what makes you believe that he's in for a big year?
Because he's got that ability. When you see a lefty or righty for that matter, but a lefty who can just take that pitch, you're being pitched away and he's going to just take his singles to left center, but he's going to drive some of those up the gap for doubles. That's a guy who can hit. I think I believe he can hit 300. There are a handful of those guys every year, right?
Yeah.
But I think he can hit 300. But also with that approach, then you do damage on the mistakes on the inner half of the plate, and he can hit with some power. Last year, I think he chased the power early. But this year, all spring long, he looked quiet a little bit in L.A., but we saw really good at-bats in Seattle. That approach works. And there's a reason they signed him to a six-year deal before he had a major league at-bat. They understand just how talented he is at the plate, and he'll be good enough defensively because he works really hard at it, and he's a good athlete, but I think the bat could be special.
Talking to Dan Dickerson, voice of the Tigers, defense. Riley Green playing some center field. We had AJ on earlier. He said we're not afraid to play him in center,
right?
But there's always a calculus that goes into
right.
it. What do you make of the trade-off playing him in center versus playing him in the corner?
Yeah, I just it's all about health. I mean, he is such a dedicated outfielder because George Lombard makes you a dedicated outfielder, meaning you're backing up third base on throws from right field. You are constantly moving if you're doing your job. I remember after Pittsburgh, which has this huge left field, the Pittsburgh series last year is like, I'm exhausted because he was just constantly running to do his job, back up bases, cover the gap, whatever it might be. The more you can take him out of center field, obviously you've cut the running down to the gaps by half. And the mileage matters. And keeping him healthy is priority number one. He has spent the last two winters building his body up. He has a rock solid 220 now. But that's been it's not like work on your swing or do anything baseball related. The biggest thing is get bigger, stronger, and be in a position where you can stay healthy for 162 games. And keeping him in left field where he was gold glove caliber and should have won a gold glove, that's a pretty good spot. He can play center field, but the less you play him there, basically, the better your chances are of keeping him healthy all year. Take the mileage off the legs.
The right side of the infield. You already mentioned Torque. And if he continues to hit the way he is, and Cole Keith has a season you think he's going to have, what happens when Gleyber Torres comes back?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think they'll kind of rotate guys through, but you know, you want Carpenter there probably when Vierling comes back and Meadows comes back. It's going to be pretty interesting. You can't put everybody at DH, but you got to try to find spots for everybody. But that's why the Tigers keep pushing guys to play positions they haven't played.
Mm-hmm.
Torkelson in the outfield was a non-obvious move, but
do you think we see that?
I do. They put Andy Baños out there a couple of years ago, never played it, and I love how they approach it. It's just like, we're going to believe you can play it until you show us you can't.
Yeah.
Versus, he can't play there. They don't do that. And so because you're going to have to figure some things out when everybody gets healthy, mm-hmm. they'll figure it out. But I think it'll be just kind of a rotation. That's why Colt Keith played second base during the spring. Only one start, but he continued to take reps there. So that maybe, I mean, I'm not sure that Torres would move up to a different position. But if Keith can play two positions, Torkelson can play two positions.
You can get all the bats in the lineup.
Buehrling can play outfield, infield. It'll be mix and match, but believe me, they're already thinking about it.
Well, that's the thing.
Put it this way. If you hit,
you're going to be playing.
You're going to be playing.
They'll find a spot for you.
And it's a good problem to have if you say, boy, we got 10 guys and we only got 9 spots. Yeah. You can play the matchups, which we know AJ's a master at.
That's the biggest thing that came out of pitching chaos at the end of last year, and now we're seeing it on the position player side. It's just AJ, you know, told us in the offseason on Tiger Talk, he's like, we maximize, we understand and appreciate every player's strengths more than any place I've ever been, which means now we can put them in positions to succeed because we understand where they are the strongest. And that's why the mix and match now on the position player side comes right out of that pitching chaos plan where they really had to figure some things out and did quite well.
Kerry Carpenter, are we going to see him more against lefties? AJ gets asked about it a lot. That's part of that is he ideally plays well against righties, mashes righties.
Right.
With the injuries now, and they need bats in the lineup, and he's playing the corners. Where's Kerry's role, do you think, in all of this?
Well, I think it's mostly against righties, and he'll get, he had a good at-bat against Tanner Scott. The occasional lefty that has to be a good matchup for him.
Right.
Now, he hit lefties in the minor leagues, but lefties in the major leagues tend to be the very best.
Yeah, they're a different animal.
And he had a nice line drive to left field. But as long as you have a Justin Henry Molloy on the bench, Andy Ibanez on the bench, and it's a key spot in the sixth inning, and they bring in a lefty to face Carpenter, they know they don't want to face Ibanez, and that's why he remained a chess piece even as he cooled off last year the entire season, because managers are circling that guy. When they bring in a lefty to face Carpenter, they know they've got Ibanez, and that's a real calculation they have to make.
Do you remember in the playoff game and how the Guardians felt like they were jumping the gun? AJ was kind of in their head in that way, trying to be one step ahead, but now they're emptying out their bench before the fourth inning. It's fascinating to watch.
It's unbelievable. I every time I think I've figured out how AJ puts together a lineup and all the thought behind it, no, there's another layer I have not considered, or two or three.
We've seen Skubal develop, obviously, Cy Young winner. And we've watched and hoped for more from Casey Mize. We're starting to see it now. But from your experience and watching a lot of guys come into this league, develop into aces, what's the path for Jackson Jobe? What should we expect from him this year?
It's a great question. I kind of go back to Verlander in 06, because in terms of comps, power arm, raw still a little bit. He hasn't pitched much above double A.
Right.
But he's a quick learner. He's gotten bigger, stronger since he was drafted, obviously, out of high school. But I think the biggest thing, he's such a quick learner. And he wants to apply what he took out of last start, whatever that start might be, spring training start or his first start against Seattle, and then apply it the next game. They say he's really good at doing that. So we only saw... We scratched the surface in spring, and he said it. I'm not near midseason form. I go back to what Casey Mize told us in L.A. He's got the best stuff on the staff. I remember Bobby and I were standing there like, what? He's like, oh, yeah, ask Skubal. He'll tell you. Everybody will tell you. He's got the best stuff on the staff.
On a staff with a Cy Young winner. That's
you're
crazy.
Getting a lot of listeners so really excited right now.
There's such a learning curve. There's going to be ups and downs, but you pair the best stuff with a desire to get better every single outing and the ability to take what you've learned and apply it in your next start. You're going to look forward to every one of his starts, because on any given day, it could be something really
How
special.
Valuable then was that experience? Because we all thought, you're bringing Jackson Jobe into a playoff game?
I know.
With this is his introduction to Major League Baseball. How valuable is that experience?
Even he said, I mean, it was only a few innings, right?
Yeah.
4 in the regular season and a few in the postseason. But he said it was invaluable. Now now I know what this feels like in the most high-pressure situation. And he really handled it pretty well down in Houston. So I think those innings were big, and nothing faces this kid. And I love his demeanor, and I can't wait to see every start. But the Casey Mize start was, you touched on it, that was big.
Yeah.
I mean, he really made changes in his, developing two additional sliders. But you know, watching Nate Eovaldi, and this is what I always love when players learn from either teammates or guys around the league. They're like, I watch Nate Eovaldi. The best splitters are thrown harder. So he, conscious effort, 3 miles an hour harder.
It's noticeable.
And it changes everything. He says, I don't care about the metrics. And this is a guy who cares about the metrics on every pitch. I don't care. I know that if I throw it harder, it's going to be a better pitch. And that first start, we saw it in spring, but yeah, that first start of the season against Seattle was a pretty good indication that this could be pretty special.
Six strikeouts, four, I believe, with that split finger.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That's exciting stuff. Dan, we appreciate your time. We know it's a busy day.
Guys, it's awesome.
Love talking baseball.
Love being here with you guys. Thanks. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
It's Dan Dickerson. It's 97.1.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's a pleasant surprise.
I know.
You never know who you're going to bump into.
Yeah, well, we got the voice of baseball season. Now we got the voice of football season. Are we ready to go?
What's going on, guys?
Dan Miller.
No introduction.
Voice
needed.
Of the morning's here.
That's right. You guys are here with Fox 2.
We're here. We're on the deck outside here at Hockey Town, overlooking Woodward and looking out towards the stadium. And it's look, this is always a cool day. I mean, this is, for me, this is 28 or 29. And it just hits different. Even if you talk to players on the team that have been at opening days in other stadiums or been at opening days as a member of another team, there's just something different about Detroit. It's not just being provincial. There's just something different about it.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter the sport. When an event like this, whether it's the draft, an opening day, we know that's going to happen every year. It is an absolute celebration, and it literally is a holiday here in Southeast Michigan.
And it's not just having a ticket. It's all the people that come down and don't have tickets.
Yeah.
And the people that have tickets that never go in the game because they're stuck in here, and they don't want to leave. Yeah. But it's
they might not be able to walk over there.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think the ratio of sick calls to previously taken vacation calls is on a game like on a day like this?
No kidding.
Yeah, I asked that question. I'm like, is this a vacation day or is this you calling in sick? Yeah.
I mean, if you're calling in sick, they kind of know.
Yeah, you're not giving it away. Yeah.
Drinker, baseball fan called in sick, guilty.
Beautiful day. Yeah, we know where you are. That's the thing. 50 degrees today, first pitch. It's supposed to be a beautiful day.
And we've been through some miserable ones here. I remember one year, it was early years at Comerica Park, we built a little teeny snowman along the third baseline. That Hammer and I, we were waiting out there for players to come out or something like that. And she may still have a picture of it somewhere, but there was a little, what didn't snow much, but enough that we could put together a little like 8-inch snowman there. And that tells you what kind of day it was. We've had some miserable ones. This should be pretty good.
What's your favorite moment of opening day?
You know, for me, the game isn't necessarily something that comes to mind for me. It's just the electricity.
Yeah.
And I would say the same thing about some of these big Lions games that we've had, you know, recently, the Rams game in the playoffs or the Sunday night opener against the Rams. It's the vibe you feel when you walk the street and you're going to the stadium, even 2 hours before the game, just the electricity. I mean, that's something when you feel that down here, it's palpable. And that's the first thing that always comes to mind for me when I think of opening day for the Tigers. It's the fans. And I tell people all the time, and it's the common theme, the best part about, you know, the Lions turning things around is seeing the fans happy. The fans make everything work. The fans make everything worthwhile. They make our jobs worthwhile, and they make going to games worthwhile. And it's just, when they're doing it and they're happy and they're clicking, that's when things work.
And downtown is so great right now. It's so much different than it was 20 years ago.
No doubt.
So those, and you mentioned it, like now is a time where people will come down here. I don't have a ticket to the game, but it's an event and I just want to be downtown.
And there's places to go.
Yeah.
And there's so many different places to go. And now, you know, look, if we can get some playoff games, the Wings are looking tough right now, but the Pistons, I mean, let's go. This is an easy team to get behind. This is an exciting, fun team to watch. So I think, if we can get a couple of dates with them down here, it's just rounding things out, and it's just so much fun.
Dan, we'll have to pick your brain on Lions on another time.
Let's do it. We got plenty of time to go. We still got the draft to go. So I get the feeling leaving the league meetings this week and listening to those guys, there's still some things coming. They're not done. I know everybody it's wants to, like, 2 days after free agency.
Oh.
Two days after free agency, people are like,
"No,
how are they going to play with this roster?
Davenport starting, what are they going to do?
15 win roster is just not good enough.
I still think, and I got no inside intel, but just look, you can look at Brad Holmes and just kind of tell. There's some things coming, and it's going to be exciting.
Trey Hendrickson confirmed. We got it.
All right, it is done. Did I say that?
He's Dan Miller, voice of the Lions.
Hey, guys, enjoy.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah. Let's get to Heather with the news.
Well, listen to this, guys. There's an Arkansas couple that were vacationing at a Scottsdale, Arizona Airbnb, and it was only after they say they enjoyed an intimate moment on their first evening in the home that they discovered a hidden camera above the bed.
Oh, above the bed?
Yeah, in like a fake or a smoke detector. But something
looked behind the mirror?
No.
On the ceiling?
Wasn't that type of Airbnb.
What was the giveaway?
So they also say they found a memory card in this spy cam that contained videos of past renters dating back to 2020.
Holy.
Yeah. They also say they located devices that they believed could live stream what
was
transpired.
Going on.
Yeah. Yes. So obviously they have filed a lawsuit. Last year, Airbnb did ban the use of indoor security cameras at all of its listings worldwide. I guess you can ban something and people can still do whatever they want.
Has that thought ever crossed your mind, staying in an Airbnb?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, you mean the cameras? I don't even know.
For intimate moments?
Yeah. I've thought about cameras in Airbnbs before. Like, I wonder if somebody could see what I'm doing right now.
Because you have them for your house, so why wouldn't someone else have
yeah,
for their
but
house?
If it was an Airbnb, well, clearly you're not allowed to, but I would never do that at a rental property. Yeah. That's ridiculous. Anyway.
Did they rate themselves?
Oh, 10 out of 10 for sure. Yeah, 10 out of 10 without a doubt. Anyway, they're hoping to get a lot of money for this. Obviously, they want a court to decide, but they say they've suffered emotional distress, embarrassment, economic damages, and the list goes on and on. The dates for the Detroit Lions offseason program are set. So the team will convene April 22nd to begin the first two phases, which lasts a combined total of 5 weeks. They will hold organized team activities from May 28th through the 30th and also June 3rd through the 5th. There's more. A mandatory veteran mini camp will also take place June 10th through the 12th. And then the dates for the team's rookie mini camp have yet to be announced.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, we got the schedule.
Things are moving right along.
On the horizon.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yep. Have you heard about this? Easter potatoes could actually be a thing this year.
Easter potatoes.
Yeah. So the New York Times says that eggs are so expensive this year that people are planning to dye potatoes instead. So this is not a new thing, I guess. In 2023, Potatoes USA tried to make it a thing, right?
Like, yeah, sure.
Dye our potatoes, not the eggs. And then PETA, of course, had their opinions as well. And last year, they tried to get the White House to use potatoes in the Easter egg roll. But that didn't go over as well. So this year, there's apparently videos on how to dye potatoes, and they're trending online right now, so you can check it out. Some people say they're just going to skip dyeing altogether and use the plastic eggs for egg hunts, which is traditional, I guess,
too. I feel like that was common.
Yeah, you could use a potato for that egg toss.
But
start
usually,
launching it.
Dyeing of Easter eggs is...
It's a
tradition, right? Like, I can't wait to do it with my kids. It's going to be messy.
It only costs you $3,000.
Exactly. We have one of those little machines where it like rotates the egg and you can just color on it and it creates up. That's easier for them to do than like throwing it in the dye. But
you love potatoes.
I do love potatoes, but I don't think I'd want to eat a dyed potato.
No,
and
it seems like
it would
permeate all of it.
Yeah, it would, right? Then the whole thing would be the color.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Yeah. The term bore out is trending. So the term has a lot of the same symptoms as burnout, especially in jobs and things, but it's very different. So instead of feeling overwhelmed by work and you're feeling burnt out, you're actually underwhelmed and bored by it.
Then do more.
Well, that's what they want to do. They want to do more, but some say it happens when you're stuck in a role where there's no progression.
Yeah.
Like you're not working towards anything. You've reached the height of the position you're in, and you want to do more, but you're just bored by it. Some say that it happens when you've been in the same role for too long. You need something new.
Yeah. Spice up the life a little bit.
yeah, that's what people want. Okay, so we've heard of the side effects, the negative side effects from some of these new weight loss drugs, Ozempic, Wegovy. There's like Ozempic face.
Yeah, Ozempic butt.
Ozempic butt, mm-hmm. Ozempic boobs, I think was a thing.
Oh, really?
Well, you're just losing weight so quickly that everything starts sagging a little bit. But there's another side effect that might come along with these as well. Now, those people taking it might experience hair loss. Oh. Which makes sense if you think about losing weight so quickly,
yeah.
And maybe your body's not getting enough of the nutrients you need, the essential vitamins you need. They say it's not like a permanent thing,
yeah.
That once you kind of regulate where your body's going to be,
nutrition intake,
your hair will flourish. But for a while there, you might experience some thinning hair. Pros and cons, I guess.
Balding.
So you'd be fat and balding until you complete one or the other.
Yes, I believe it's. I mean, it could affect all of your body hair, but
there's hair in many places.
Is there an area you're concerned about?
There is, but I think most people, and it actually says that women are more likely to have hair loss with twice the risk of men. So,
okay,
and as a woman, you don't want to lose your hair.
No, I can't imagine. So, unless it's that.
Well,
peach fuzz.
Sure, John.
If you could target it like that, sure, John. Heather with the news. AJ Hinch joins us next. It's opening day. It's 97.1.